Inside Maine's exploding coffee scene. If you're a lover of specialty, locally roasted coffee, you are living in good times. Whether your thing is an espresso, a breve, an Americano, a cappuccino, a latte, a mocha, a hot press, or a cold press, you can find a good one here in Maine. It didn't used to be that way, but over the past 20 years, and especially the past decade, coffee culture has taken root in Maine and the nation in a big way. The U.S. coffee market is estimated to be worth $48 billion. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with two of Maine's artisanal coffee roasters about this trend and its impact on Maine. What does coffee mean to you? Are you addicted to that perfect cup of French roast every morning? Do you like to meet your friends at your favorite coffee shop? Maine Calling percolates next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Coffee, for many of us, is what gets us going in the morning, or keeps us running throughout the day. Some people like their coffee plain and simple. Others enjoy trying out different varieties, and boy, are there a lot of varieties out there. Today, we are a state that is a mecca for good coffee. Joining me in the studio to talk about this, Mary Ellen Lindemann, a co-founder of Coffee by Design, which has four coffee houses in Portland and one inside the L.L. Bean flagship store, and Bill Kitchen, director of development and coffee culturist. I was afraid I was going to say that wrong. Coffee culturist. Am I saying that right?
You certainly
are. Okay, from Bold Coast Coffee in East Machias. Of course, we'd like to hear from you. Are you a serious coffee drinker? Do you grind your own beans? What method have you found makes the perfect cup of joe? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to start by saying it's so fun for me to have you both here. And Mary Ellen Lindemann, I believe I was one of your very first customers 22 years ago at the first Coffee by Design. It happened to open near the apartment where my husband and I were living. And it was an entirely different landscape back then, wasn't it?
It was just a little bit different, not just coffee, but Portland itself. I tell people the story all the time. Think about downtown Portland, 40% vacancy rate. And what is now the Arts District was the Pornography District, and that's where we opened Coffee by Design.
And what did you see, Mary Ellen? What did you think was going to happen? Did you think you were just going to open a sweet little coffee shop like they had in some of the bigger cities, like in San Francisco and Seattle, or did you have the vision that you were going to do something big back then?
No, it's so funny. Our initial business plan was going to be two of us and a part-timer. And when I look back at the early business plan, and Alan, my partner, and I had actually left Maine because of the economy at the time, and then really made a conscious decision to move back. We wanted to be part of what we hoped would be this renaissance in downtown Portland. If people like us didn't move back, how do downtowns revitalize? But we still, it was going to be very modest, and we projected 25 customers the first day, and actually 25 customers, I think, probably for the first year, and had not anticipated that the State Theater had just been renovated, and Bob Dylan decided to tour, which he hadn't done for some time, and decided his tickets should go on sale the day we opened. So we had 250 customers our first day, and we still can't remember the first day. And it's been lovely because we've had memory books put out, and customers remember the first day vividly.
Oh, my goodness. What a great story. Now, Bill, thank you so much for driving to the studio today. You are in a very different place. You're in East Machias. For one, many fewer people, fewer potential customers within driving distance. Why did you choose East Machias to open your store?
It's actually where we live. So it was born out of a lack of a good cup of coffee for us to get where we live there. I think that, Maine is kind of funny. You've got the state of Portland, which is much bigger than just the city. And then you've got vacation land. Then you've got what we consider real Maine, which is the Bold Coast. And then the Northwoods, which might as well be Canada. So I think you kind of have to almost look at Maine in those four spectrums. There is very little. Not only is the nearest movie theater an hour and a half away, the nearest pour over is an hour and a half away.
Hour and a half away. I was going to ask you, how far do you have to go for your next sort of specialty coffee place? It's an hour and a half.
And that would be Starbucks.
Mm. When did you open and what has the response been?
We opened officially a year and a half ago. This was born, like many of the small batch specialty roasters, was born out of somebody doing it in their kitchen. And that's how Troy started, roasting in his kitchen, and then began to give coffee to friends. And as friends liked it and began asking for more, then there was a store asking for it, and it grew very organically.
Do you believe, you know, Mary Ellen talked about wanting to be a part of Portland's Renaissance, and maybe you were a visionary, maybe you were lucky, you know, but the stars did align, and indeed you have been. I think people would not dispute that Coffee by Design has been a part of a real transformation in the city of Portland the last 20 years. Do you hope that your coffee shop will do the same kind of thing, will be a seed of something in your area?
We definitely do. There's a lot of us who are involved with this, who are also involved with the economic development of Washington County and the Bold Coast. So, yes, we do see this as a potential vehicle to drive that. Yes.
All right. Well, we're joined on the line now by Charlie Colgan. Charlie, hi. Thanks for joining Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer.
Charlie Colgan, as I'm sure all of our listeners know, is an economist, economic forecaster, and professor. I want to ask you about this growth in coffee. What does it sort of represent in specialty coffee, looking at it as an economist?
Well, I think that there are two things that are going on here. One is that it has become a business with what we call relatively low barriers to entry. And we're just talking about starting in your kitchen. And so it's an industry that you can do in a lot of different contexts, in a lot of different settings. The reduction in world transportation costs that makes coffee grown in the tropics accessible as an input in Maine all goes into that. At the same time, on the customer side, the development of these specialty coffees, it's become what some people have called a low price, low-cost luxury item. It's something that you can afford to do almost daily. And in real terms, even a $4 or $5 a cup of coffee doesn't cost all that much relative to what it would have cost 20, 30 years ago. So you have a lowering of costs, making an astonishing variety of product available, easy entry into the industry, and the development of a kind of branding to the field, to the product that makes it attractive for a lot of people.
So people maybe can't afford an expensive car or a handmade rug for their foyer, but they can treat themselves to a really nice cup of coffee.
Yeah, it's not quite as simple as a Lamborghini versus a Coffee by Design. Mm-hmm. But yes, it is something that people can take as a small contribution to the day if that's to their taste. That they can easily access in a number of different places. And I'm a little surprised to see East Machias being one of them, but that was my point about low barriers to entry.
That's great. And do you know of any research, Charlie? I tried to find some, and I'm wondering if you know of any on how coffee shops help with downtown revitalization efforts.
You know, I haven't seen anything on that. I think that there is a reason to suspect that the foot traffic generated by coffee shops in downtown locations is an important factor in getting people out onto the streets and creating an opportunity for other street-level businesses to operate. The proliferation of Starbucks has contributed to that. I was just in Charleston, South Carolina, and there was a Starbucks within two Starbucks within one block of one another. I'm not quite sure the economics of that, but clearly the ability to get people out, even if it's just to walk down to the corner or walk a couple of blocks to get a cup of coffee, that's contributed to the walking and walking culture and revitalization opportunities. Now, whether communities take advantage of that's another question, but it is an asset that the retail areas probably need to consider how to deal with.
Okay, Charlie Colgan, I'm going to let you go after one last question. Do you have a favorite cup of coffee?
I don't drink coffee at all.
Well, economist Charlie Colgan, thanks so much for joining us. Professor Emeritus at the University of Southern Maine. Thank you so much. Mary Ellen, you wanted to talk about that, though. What is your experience with the economic impact of a coffee shop on street level with other stores?
No, I think it plays a vital role because it brings a community together. And we've seen in our history, you know, when we opened the Congress Street Coffee House, our first one, there were other local businesses there, and it actually brought more business for all of us into that community. When we opened our second location on Monument Square, it was, again, an area that had really fallen on hard times, and we viewed it as a gem of a neighborhood or a community, one of the best public open spaces in the city of Portland. And so when we opened a location there, again, it brought customers but also other businesses. When we made the decision to open on India Street, at that point, that was only going to be a roasting facility. And I was very active with the Downtown Portland Corporation Board and Economic Development in the City of Portland, and really we're looking at how do we draw more people in. And so the city actually approached Alan and me about was there the potential for us to open retail as well as roasting at that new facility, because they had noticed that it was almost an economic stimulus by having a coffee house in a neighborhood. And so we did agree. I do joke with people, I'm old enough and a little more business savvy now that I should have asked for a TIF or something. because we did open the coffee house along with the roastery, and we're lucky that we had room on our credit card to actually open the coffee house. But I think what it really shows, and it was so interesting to hear in the different parts of Maine, because what I love about coffee is Maine is segmented, but coffee brings all of us together. It's really something, and you know, we always tell people, whatever your favorite cup of coffee, it's really up to you. And we like the diversity of coffee businesses because we all look at this product and we approach it very differently. It's very personal how we all approach it.
What's interesting to me, I don't know if you all heard, there was a piece on Marketplace this past week that Starbucks was opening its first coffee house in Italy. And what I thought was so interesting about that is what apparently, according to the interviewer, that in Italy, people grab coffee and go. And what Starbucks is thinking of bringing to Italy is the idea of coming, opening up your laptop, spending some time in a coffee shop, that will be a new idea for Europe. And I'm wondering about that aspect of coffee culture, about people coming and staying a while. Mary Ellen, I know that people do that at Coffee by Design. Do you find that in East Machias? Is your place, Bill, is it a place where people come and whether they use it as a meeting for business, a meeting for friends, or a place to do work for a while? Has Bold Coast Coffee become sort of a center?
We don't have a retail destination.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. It is something that we're looking at, and it's funny that you would bring up TIF grant because that is something that we're looking at. And we do believe that it becomes a point of destination. And I think we all have Starbucks to really thank for changing that whole paradigm, at least on a mass level. You know, it becomes a gathering place. And now, more and more frequently, I think you see the coffee leaders, certainly Coffee by Design, jumping into the education side of it. You know, there is a lot behind it. And I think people are beginning to discover that that the actual process of brewing coffee, people are beginning to want to and expect to be able to brew the same type of coffee that they get out at home.
So where can one, what is your business model? You don't have a retail store. Are you providing coffee to bakeries? Are you selling it at the local farmer's market? Are you selling it at the local grocery store? Where does somebody buy Bold Coast coffee?
We are selling at everything from co-ops to hardware stores to gift stores, boutiques, grocery stores.
And next, looking at retail.
Correct.
All right. And Mary Ellen, I wanted to ask you about this idea of a coffee culture and how you decide when you open a retail store, how many tables, how much space. Are there rules about how long you can sit at a table before somebody asks you nicely to make some space for someone else? You
know, that's an interesting question, because when we opened our most recent location, Diamond Street, which actually, if you're in the neighborhood, it's the 2-year birthday party, so come by and have cake. It's the first time where people literally are moving in for the whole day. They're setting up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they're there till 5 in the evening. And it is a challenge, because you want everybody to enjoy the space. And so it's a matter of literally approaching people. And we hate the idea of signs and telling people, no, you can't do something. So it's more having wonderful – we have an amazing team of people who work with us. Our staff really approaching people and just letting them know if the place is packed, would you mind actually sharing your space with someone else? I think just giving people an idea that this is meant to be everyone's go-to place, that's our hope. But it is. It's been very interesting, the whole dynamic of it. And I had never envisioned that there would be a coffee house of all laptops. I like how people engage with each other. And so in designing – the Diamond Street space that was really important to us is still creating a space where people can engage in conversation. But if they want to come and do work, have meetings, it's actually amazing how many people hold meetings in our
All right.
space.
Well, guess what? We have to take a break. When we come back, your comments and questions. The number is 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Husson University, offering graduate study in business, criminal justice, education, and health professions, husson.edu, and Finance Authority of Maine, committed to expanding business and education opportunities by investing in Mainers' success, famemaine.com.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about lead, why it was used in pipes, paint, and gasoline, how it came to be regulated, and who's being exposed to lead today in addition to the people of Flint. Our guests will be historians Gerald Markowitz and David Rosner, authors of the book Lead Wars, The Politics of Science and the Fate of America's Children. I hope you'll join us.
And you can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. The very last episode of Downton Abbey will be broadcast on Maine Public Television this Sunday, March 6th. In addition, this Sunday, starting at noon, we'll broadcast a Downton Abbey Marathon, a complete rebroadcast of the entire final season, culminating in the final episode at 9 that evening. See your March Experience program guide or visit mpbn.net for complete scheduling information for Downton Abbey this weekend, and enjoy. And thanks for helping make it all possible.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about coffee. In the studio with me, Mary Ellen Lindemann, who is co-founder of Coffee by Design. Bill Kitchen is the director of development and coffee culturist for Bold Coast Coffee, located in East Machias. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Our first call is from Bar Harbor, and it's Showmeet. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So the first thing I want to do is I want to say that my coffee I like is French press. I don't bring the water to a full boil, but when the bubbles start to form on the bottom, that's about it. I let it steep 10 minutes. So that's the answer to that question. But I'm really calling to acknowledge Rock City Coffee in Rockland. They recognize the social contract. They started with as the bookstore as part of their business, and they calved that off when the coffee business started to grow. They encouraged one of their associates to buy it from them.
Shlomit, I'm going to cut you off because our next call is from Rock City Roasters, but I'm sure they're thrilled to hear how much you like them, and I really appreciate you calling. It's interesting, Mary Ellen and Bill, you all were talking about how personal coffee is, and when you hear Shlomit describe how she makes her coffee, you both were grinning ear to ear. People feel very, very personally about their coffee, don't they?
They do. I had someone, you know, there's so many different methods of preparation now, and I had someone describing with the AeroPress, hadn't I ever tried it, that you press it into a certain type of butter instead of using dairy. She has a very specific butter that she has in her glass that she then presses the AeroPress, and so it's very rich and creamy. And I just thought that's what I love about it is everyone looks at this product and hopefully really appreciates the effort we've put into sourcing and roasting and what our buying criteria is, because we have a really strict sustainability buying criteria. But then how they take what we've done and make it their own is so personal and amazing, and they come and share their stories. They have to show us and post what they've done.
Well, we do have on the line Jared Parody. He's a roaster at Rock City Roasters in Rockland. Jared, nice timing with our last call, wasn't it?
Hello.
Hi, Jared. Were you able to hear the last call?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty good timing. I really wanted to talk to you all because you've made the headlines in the last couple weeks with a big fundraising campaign. Tell me about that. What was Rock City Roasters raising money for, and how successful were you?
Well, we were able to raise all the money we needed to buy a new smokeless smart roaster.
And what is a smokeless smart roaster?
It's a roaster made by Loring that has zero emissions and is much more efficient, uses fuel much more efficiently.
Okay. It's interesting to me because some of the money the business put up itself, from what I've read, and tell me if I'm wrong, some from an Indiegogo campaign and some members of the community helping you fundraise. What do you think that says about the role of Rock City Roasters to your community?
Well, we feel highly valued, and it's really rewarding to get that kind of support, and people really show they cared, and we were able to be successful.
Were you surprised that you made it?
Well, at the very beginning, it was pretty daunting to imagine that you're going to reach that goal. But as things got on, like just the enthusiasm and the support of people around us really kept us going.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Jared Parody is a roaster at Rockland's Rock City Roasters, which just raised $80,000 for a new odorless, smokeless roaster. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So I want to get back to something we were talking about before the break, which is cost. Charlie Colgan was talking about the low cost of coffee. But Mary Ellen, you say, you know, the costs aren't what they used to be.
No, and they shouldn't be. I mean, when you think of all the work that goes into on the farming end, you know, one of the things that we do, we travel quite a bit, and we surprise staff every year and take several staff members with us on their first farm trip, and all of them come back and the comment they make is coffee's too cheap still. When you see the work that goes into at origin on the farm, especially when you're talking about specialty coffee and the expectations we have, the criteria we have of when we will buy from someone, everything from the seed to how they develop that plant to how they pay their workers, all of their sustainability practices, it's really unbelievable. I actually tell people sometimes, I think many of these farms are way ahead of a lot of places here in the U.S. So there is a cost associated with it, and you don't want it that farmers are just surviving. You want them to thrive like anyone else. They have families and communities to support, and so we're paying a lot more for coffee now, and we should, in order to ensure that we have the quality product that we want. Also, a lot of these farms are in third world countries, but the land is magnificent. And to convince a farmer not to sell their land for development or tourism, then you've got to show them that they have a business model that they can actually support themselves and thrive, not just survive.
Bill, where does Bold Coast source its coffee beans?
We source primarily from Central and South America. And like I think most coffee companies at this point, they have farms that they're working with, that they've identified. In fact, we have just purchased an equity interest in a farm in Costa Rica. It's one that we like a lot and feel that if we're actually down there and investing and making sure that the livelihoods are protected, that the resources are managed properly, that's part of the process.
All right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go to Biddeford and Jeannie. Hi, Jeannie. Go ahead.
Hi. I think you actually just kind of answered my questions because I was going to ask about how these different coffee sellers, ensure things like good working conditions, good wages, and good environmental care in these countries. Because I studied some of this, and I know that growing coffee can be a really tough job. It has many different things you have to do, and then it can be rejected, if one bean is bad or something like that. And it can also be very environmentally harsh on the land. So if there's anything else you'd like to say, I'd appreciate that. But let me also give a shout out to Elements in Biddeford, which is an awesome locally owned coffee shop that's definitely part of our city's renaissance. And also, if you want to go on vacation, I highly recommend the National Park of Coffee in the coffee region of Colombia. We call it Coffee Disney, and it's a really, really fun place to go.
Jeannie, thanks so much for calling, Bill.
I think the interesting thing to note in all of this is that these changes in resource management and sustainability are actually being driven in the States. It's being driven by the buyers. The practices are very deeply entrenched within the communities that the beans are in fact grown, where the farms are. And these changes are being driven by the buyers.
I think also it's amazing how open the farmers are. They want our feedback. I was just in India. I've been in India twice in the past 4 months, and I'm actually part of a Women's Coffee Alliance, and I really was interested to find what is the quality of coffee in India, and I can tell you it's outstanding. And so I was invited to be a participant in a women's event that actually was honored to be a judge at the first ever All-Women's Barista Championship in Bengaluru, which was really phenomenal. But I had a chance to visit farms and actually ended up bringing a coffee back that's incredible. And went back in January because I wanted to go during harvest. The event I went to was in September, and I visited 3 to 4 farms. I really wanted to see what was available. And what I was so moved by is people doing outstanding work. They wanted feedback. They wanted to hear how they could do a better job. And what we've told our customers is don't just look for a sticker on a bag. Trust the roaster you're buying from. Ask us what our criteria is. Because for some of these farms, certification is very expensive.
Right.
And as one farmer said to me, do I pay for the certification or do I pay for better infrastructure? Do I pay my workers better? But when you go on these farms, they're providing health facility, education. It's amazing what is being offered. And we're talking about specialty coffee farms, the people who are really getting top dollar, but extremely well educated. But they want to do whatever we ask to improve the quality so that our customers know this is a great coffee, but it's a lot more than just a great cup of coffee. It's doing great things at origin.
And I think that, speaking about Maine in particular, we're a state that deeply ingrained in us is resource management. So I think it's almost second nature for us to look to this industry in that way.
We have a tweet. Big saludos to Mary Allen from Rawl in Panama, streaming your program in Panama. How fun is that? And we have an email here from John in Durham. He says, while there are many great coffees available at local roasters, I find so much satisfaction using my Whirly Pop on the stove to roast up a pound of beans every week. Have not purchased roasted beans in over a year. Do any of the roasters offer green beans to home roasters?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's please come by our Diamond Street location. I love it on any given day. We have, as we see in the news all the time, a growing New Mainer asylum-seeking immigrant community. And for years, the Somalis have come to buy green from us because they pan roast. And absolutely come look at the beans, decide what you like. We actually have on our shelving at Diamond Street green available, already bagged up, some choices that we think you might want to try. Our roasters, we have two amazing roasters in-house who, if you have questions about what should I try next, what are the profiles, they're happy to share.
Great. And Bill, did you get started with a Whirly Pop on your stove? How did you become a coffee culturist?
No, I didn't actually. I've used a French press for years, although I've recently fallen in love with Chemex. I just have. It's a staple. And I think that brings up an interesting point, which is learning how to make coffee. And I tell people all the time, brew like a baker. If you actually pay attention to the grind, the measurement, the time, and the temperature, those are the four things. It is not just throwing coffee into water and letting it go for 3 to 5 minutes. You know, that's not a cup of coffee.
What is a Chemex? I know what a French press is. What's a Chemex?
A Chemex is a filtered pour over. It was a company that was started in 1942, I believe, or thereabouts. It's the glass, blown glass, single piece of that looks like an hourglass.
Okay.
It's one of the hottest sellers. No, it's a Chemex glass, and we can't keep them in stock. It's, you know, it's funny. It shows over the years with the industry, you know, went from French press, then AeroPress, and now Chemex. You can't keep them in stock. And you know, I think that's really an important point you make, though, about people's preparation of coffee. And what we think is important, too, is just enjoy it. I think sometimes people get so nervous about, are they not doing the proportions correctly or the water-to-coffee ratios? And it's meant to be something you enjoy and have fun with. And also, it might be that you don't prefer Chemex. You like French press. And so we encourage people, again, at our Diamond Street Coffee Bar, we have many methods for people to prepare coffee. And it can be the exact same coffee, but the nuances are very different depending upon how it's been prepared.
And that's such a magic time. It's discovery.
So we've got Solange in Portland. Hi, Solange. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Mary Ellen.
Hi, Solange.
I wanted to point out that Coffee by Design, I think, was one of the first places that made a real effort to train their employees in how to interact with customers who might present some challenging behavior while in their shop. Particularly, I think, Mary Ellen, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I think it came about with your Congress Street store, and you worked with other organizations to learn how to deal with people, how to interact with them in a respectful way that allowed everybody to feel like they came out okay. So that was my comment.
No, I really appreciate you mentioning that, because I think that being aware, mental health awareness is really important to us. And the one thing we always wanted was to have a diverse customer base. And so not having it be that someone didn't feel welcome, but in some cases, learning how you communicate information so someone understands the behavior, the expectation of a behavior. And Congress Street was the store. And I have to say it was when the institutions in the state of Maine deinstitutionalized and people were actually mainstreamed without a lot of support. And so we were finding a flood of people in our coffee house, which we were thrilled that people felt comfortable coming in, but there were behavior issues. And so we were very fortunate that we reached out to a support team of people to help us train our staff and ourselves in how do we welcome this diverse customer base and how do we actually communicate so that they understand an expectation. I learned early on, which was surprising in asking someone to leave, that if you've been institutionalized, the two things that were punishments when you didn't behave were cigarettes and coffee were taken away. So for me to ask someone to leave was really traumatic. And so learning how did we better communicate what we needed as far as behavior, but also ensuring that people know you're welcome here.
On that note, we do have to take another break. This is Maine Calling. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Casella, committed to safe, efficient disposal of non-recyclable waste for all 16 Maine counties. Casella, giving resources new life. And the American Lung Association in Maine, hosting the 32nd annual Trek Across Maine in June, Learn more at biketreknewengland.org.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Marathoners Ryan and Sarah Hall ran professionally together for over a decade. She still runs competitively. Now he lifts weights.
Feels good walking around with a little bit more muscle on my frame, so just having fun with that.
It's like, oh wow, like that is more attractive to have wider shoulders and bigger biceps.
The story of Ryan and Sarah Hall in their own words this week on Only a Game. Join us.
And join us for Only a Game Saturday morning at 7 a.m. And join us at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling for Ideas from the CBC. Ideas convened a special forum to address the prevailing sense that the human species may be facing the end. Tune in for a panel discussion on how humanity may not only survive, but actually thrive. That's Ideas from the CBC, coming up after Maine Calling at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, coffee. In the studio with me, Mary Allen Lindemann, co-founder of Coffee by Design, and Bill Kitchen, director of development and coffee culturist for Bold Coast Coffee. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. And we're going to Floyd, who's calling from Waterville. Hi, Floyd.
And a couple things. First of all, people are going to laugh when I use my real name because people know me as a coffee snob. I roast my own beans, have for a long time, use a French press. And a couple of cautions that I would tell or ask of your guest there. Number one, because of our everybody knows the giant in the coffee business and how a lot of us believe that they over-roast most of their beans. I would say be careful that you don't over-roast. I don't know the place in East Machias, but I do love Coffee by Design. They have a wide variety of choices, and it's a great place in Portland. But in Waterville, we've got nothing. Anybody out there, all of or you guys, reach out. Come on up here.
There you go. Economic opportunity there. Here on Maine Calling. Bill, do you agree that people tend to over-roast?
I don't know if that's really true. I will say that there's a trend of late to go into light roasts. That is a very, very new movement in the last couple of years, and it's one that I think surprises a lot of drinkers who are used to a big, heavy, bold, full cup of coffee. And all of a sudden, this opens up a whole new world, and for a lot of people, this isn't coffee. It's like, wow, this is fruity, and this is bright, and it's light. And that will give rise to, I think, one of the biggest trends you're going to see in the next couple of years is an increase in cold coffee-related beverages.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Floyd. And, maybe you'll see Mary Allen or Bill in Waterville pretty soon now. We're going to go to Portland and Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I'm calling to make a comment about the Starbucks article, which I saw but didn't read. I'm a little surprised to see that anybody is suggesting we're bringing something to Italy. I grew up in a rural area in Michigan and never had coffee except instant, so I never liked it until I sat in a little coffee house in Florence looking over the Arno and had espresso and thought, oh, this is why people love coffee. And so when I came back to Portland and there were these wonderful coffee houses, I thought that was great. But I don't know where Starbucks gets the idea that either they're bringing something new or that sitting and talking is something that's American, because people are doing that in little coffee houses, certainly in Florence and other places in Italy. And one of the great things about that European places like that is that people do share tables. So I guess what I'm saying is that I think that it's great that Portland's doing that, but I've certainly never had better espresso anywhere.
Right. Well, and I think that that's sort of the irony in why it's making kind of headlines is it's so bold and so sort of brash of Starbucks to think they could open a store in Milan, Italy. But Mary Ellen, you're nodding.
No, because it's interesting. I mean, there are countries that actually have fought having Starbucks come in, and Colombia in particular. And it's not that they're anti-Starbucks. They want to maintain their identity and their culture for coffee, which is very deep.
Right. Well, thanks for calling. Nancy, we're going to go to East Machias and Becky. Hi, Becky. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
I just wanted to say that Bill is absolutely correct about a lot of things, one of which is that it's a very, very long way for us to travel to go get a nice cup of coffee that we can depend on the quality. It's at least an hour and a half. I think he was underestimating. It might be more like two. So I think people who really enjoy coffee kind of get accustomed to finding ways to make a superb cup ourselves. And I just wanted to say that for me, it's so much fun. You know, coffee just is really a blast. When I get up in the morning, I can't quite decide, you know, let's see, it's all about what I feel that morning. Do I want the AeroPress? Do I want to use my Chemex? Or maybe I want to go visit my friend Sarah, who makes the most mean cup of French press coffee on the planet. So, you know, I'm not tied to any particular method, but what I would love to see is, you know, a notice in the paper any day now that Bold Coast is going to have a coffee shop that we could all get together and sit for hours with each other in this community. So,
Bill, pressure's on.
We're working.
Becky, thanks so much for your call. And we do have another similar call. Bold Coast Coffee's great. This is, an email. Bold Coast Coffee's great. I first enjoyed this coffee at the annual meeting and banquet of the Machias Bay Area Chamber of Commerce, where everyone seemed overwhelmed by the taste. Fortunately, the French Cellar Wine and Cheese Shop in Machias has been one of the businesses selling this product. So that's from Wayne in Roque Bluffs. You have a lot of fans, Bill. And thank you, Becky, for your call. And now we're going to go to Anita in Camden. Hi, Anita. Go ahead.
Hi, I love a good cup of coffee, but I am also a devoted recycler with a deep concern about sustainability, and I would like the panelists to comment on the tremendous rise of home coffee machines that use individual serving pods. They make a great cup of coffee at home, but I worry a great deal about the effect on sustainability and the tremendous impact on the waste stream that these individual serving pods have.
Well, that's interesting. It is especially interesting from a timing standpoint because it's just been within the last two quarters that Keurig is actually down. It's the first time. It might be the change in direction.
It is interesting. And I think that I feel for Green Mountain when they bought Keurig, because here you had a coffee company that was known for sustainability practices and they purchased something that becomes a huge moneymaker. And I agree, it adds to the waste stream. I think also for me, there are health concerns. If you think about it, you have a plastic cup and you're boiling through plastic that's then dripping into your cup. So what you're actually ingesting may not be the healthiest thing. We don't do K-cups. We actually encourage customers. There are many other ways to make a single cup of coffee where you're not adding to the waste stream. There is a gold filter available, but the folks who own Keurig will not allow you as an outside coffee company to buy them to resell, which I find interesting because I would think they would want to support sustainability efforts. I'm really excited because I know packaging is a huge issue for us, but to keep coffee fresh. And this summer, we're launching, doing an entirely new branding for our company, and we're very excited that we finally have found a compostable bag for our retail shelving that actually can keep the product fresh and that will hold a seal so when you seal the bag, but it is a compostable bag, and so we're hoping to launch it this summer.
Wow. Yeah,
that's something that we, too, are philosophically opposed to. We just will not go down that road.
Thanks for your call, Anita. We're going to go back to Portland and Bob. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hey there, folks. You know, I always thought that coffee was just for adults, so I didn't start drinking it till I was 50. And I felt like an adult, I guess. I will say, guys, what I do, I use the Melitta coffee filter, just, you know, pouring the hot water over the coffee through a clean paper filter, you know, that's not colored or anything like that. I've never enjoyed Starbucks coffee. It always tastes burnt to me. So I just really restrict my coffee to just making it myself. Do you guys think that Melitta, the paper filter coffee method, is fine?
Melitta's a great option. I mean, we sell quite a few Melittas. If I worked at Melitta, they missed an opportunity, I think, with the growth of what's been going on with pour over. And they're desperately trying to get back into the game. But there are other companies like Hario that have created a similar type of filter. They're not inexpensive, but there's just a certain way that Hario does the curve and the pour over that extracts coffee better. But Melita is a great option.
Thanks for your call, Bob. Headed to Deer Isle in Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I just want to say that a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, two young women started a coffee roasting shop here on the island, which has become very, very popular. A wonderful stop in the middle of the day. I saw a very happy UPS man coming down one day saying, "This is my favorite place." There is something about a pause that refreshes, and things have gone so well that they opened another shop down on our island, down in Stonington, which is only open in the summers, not where their roaster is, but the roaster is in the middle of Deer Isle. And I just say that it's a wonderful, restful place to go and to talk to some beautiful young women and get a good cup of coffee.
Well, Nancy, thanks for calling. And just FYI, I posted on the MPBN Main Calling Facebook page an article that Murray Carpenter wrote for the New York Times that mentions 44 North and three other coffee roasters in the Mid-Coast area. So a lot of fun to have that attention in the New York Times. Thanks so much, Nancy. We're running out of time now, but I wanted to get back to something we were talking about earlier, Mary Ellen, which is you talked about folks who are here who have moved to Maine from other countries coming in and buying green beans from you, people from Somalia and other countries. Probably not a connection that you expected when you were starting out on this journey 22 mm-hmm. years ago, but something that's become really important to you.
It is important, and I think when you see the changing face of Maine and the new Mainers and immigrants, asylum seekers, you know, there's so many different layers to even keep track of the people who have moved here from other countries and how do we welcome people? And coffee, unexpectedly for me, has been this huge opportunity to welcome people from other cultures. And Burundi is a great example where we brought a coffee in from Burundi and we invited the head of the Women's Association of Burundi to actually join us here in Portland. And we did a welcome event because we'd bought the micro lot of the coffee that was available through this cooperative and invited Mayor Brennan at the time to welcome her to the city. And we invited the local Burundi representative, someone whom I had never met. And now we're quite close friends. And the day before the event, we had been told, make sure you have the Burundi drummers. Drumming is really important to Burundi citizens. And Alain Nehimana, the local Burundi spokesperson, the day before the event, saw the name of the woman from Burundi and said, "She was my school teacher 25 years ago. In Burundi, haven't seen her since." We had the event, and literally there were tears, everyone, because not only was Alan a student of hers, but two other local new Mainers stepped forward, also her students. And as they said, the three things you need to know about Burundi are the drums, the people, and the coffee.
Hmm. Coffee is a international connection in such a personal way. Bill, I'm thinking about the call that we got from Waterville. And the man who wants one of you to open something there. And what I want to say is, if someone's out there living in a small town in Maine and may be interested in doing this, what advice do you have? No, I asked you. Don't turn to Mary Ellen.
I would say that, start by roasting at home. To, experiment. This is really about discovery. When somebody says, "Oh, I'd love to know more about photography," somebody else who does that will tell you, shoot every day. So in the same way, make coffee every day. There is so much to learn. It is so exciting, and there's such a process of discovery in there. If you're looking for a place, yes, I would love to open a place in Waterville.
If I can also say, too, is the caller, open a coffee house yourself. We have 5 coffee houses, and then we have our wholesale business. We've decided not to open a lot of additional coffee houses, and I always feel badly when people call because these are great communities. But people who live within the community should be the ones to open them. I know my coffee will do well in your coffee house, in your cafe, in your restaurant, but you know your community. who you would hire, what the place should look like, what hours it should be open, what your philosophy is. You don't have to roast. Open that place people come to. And you can be that person who brings your community together.
And you're seeing that happen. I mean, Bangor doesn't have a specialty coffee shop, and they will at the end of March. There's one opening up, and they're not roasting their own beans. They're buying them from Tandem, who is a great, great roaster. And so they understand the market. They understand the neighborhood. They don't have to know how to roast beans.
Wow, what an interesting conversation. I can't believe the hour is already over. Mary Ellen Lindemann and Bill Kitchen, thank you so much. Mary Ellen is one of the founders of Coffee by Design, which has four coffee houses in Portland and one in the L.L. Bean flagship store. Bill is the director of development and coffee culturist for Bold Coast Coffee in East Machias. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at midnight. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.